from KTOO in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea. President Donald Trump has endorsed Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan's re-election. In a tweet, Trump says the Republican Sullivan is doing a great job for the state while also supporting Trump's agenda. Sullivan was elected in 2014. He's been involved in military and resource development issues and efforts to address marine debris. Sullivan's highest profile challenger so far is Al Gross, an independent who earned an early endorsement from the state Democratic Party. Gross left his practice as an orthopedic surgeon. He's made fixing the healthcare system a major issue in his campaign. An Alaska Native advocacy group is seeking land and the establishment of Native corporations for communities that were omitted from a federal settlement. Juneau Empire reported that Alaska Natives without land wants a change to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act on behalf of Haines, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Tenneke Springs, and Wrangell. Officials say some tribal communities were excluded when the act passed in December 1971, leading to the creation of Alaska Native regional, urban, and village corporations. The act also transferred 68,000 square miles of land to those corporations. Changing the federal act would require a vote in Congress. When the Regional Corporation for Alaska's North Slope, ASRC, announced it was pulling out of the Alaska Federation of Natives last week, it gave no reason for the decision. Since then, some have speculated that the split stems from the Federation's convention this fall, where an ASRC leader clashed with two teenagers who were pushing for more action on climate change. But as Nat Herds with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, there's much more history between ASRC and AFN that's important to keep in mind.
If you're trying to understand the schism between AFN and ASRC, a good place to start is 1971. That was the year President Richard Nixon signed the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The act extinguished Alaska Native land claims and set the stage for construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. In return, Native groups got nearly $1 billion and 44 million acres of land. Sounds like a pretty good deal, right?
You can obviously see that I am hurt and frightened, and perhaps bitter.
Joe Upikson was president of the Arctic Slope Native Association. AFN ultimately voted overwhelmingly to ask President Nixon to approve the settlement. But Upikson's delegation dissented because they thought they were getting a bad deal. And he even signed a letter to Nixon asking him to veto the legislation. Among the reasons, the settlement allowed the state of Alaska to keep the most valuable oil-bearing lands, and it required corporations like ASRC to share most of their oil revenues with other regions, though it also required other regions to share their resource revenues, too. Here's Upikson again.
Our conclusion is that the state of Alaska wants to steal our lands, the Senate committee wants to buy our lands, and to pay the other natives of Alaska. The other natives of Alaska are willing and happy to be paid out of our lands.
The tensions between North Slope Native organizations and other Alaska Native groups have risen and fallen over the years. But people with experience working with ASRC say that history is important to keep in mind when trying to make sense of the corporation's recent actions. Another thing worth considering is that when AFN started, regional Native corporation representatives had a larger voice. But AFN's board has expanded to include more tribal and village representatives, which makes for more competing agendas and perspectives.
Well, you've got three directions and maybe a fourth or direction. You can't go to the right, you can't go to the left, you can't go forward, and you can't go backward.
Edgar Blatchford is a University of Alaska Anchorage professor who's followed AFN in regional corporation affairs for decades. In recent years, AFN has endorsed more liberal candidates like Hillary Clinton in 2016 and Democrat Mark Begich for U.S. Senate 2 years earlier. ASRC's politics swing more conservative. It supported Republican Dan Sullivan in the 2014 U.S. Senate race, and its officials celebrated the opening of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling at the Trump White House. ASRC isn't explaining its decision to leave AFN, but its announcement suggested that it wasn't connected to one specific event. It said the question was under discussion for more than a year. At least one shareholder is skeptical about that, however. Carlin Itchok is an ASRC shareholder and heads the Anchorage office of an environmental organization.
I think it's not lost on anyone that this is completely related to the tension and the disagreements that came up over the climate change resolution.
Itchok is talking about AFN's annual convention in October, when an ASRC executive took issue with a proposed declaration of a climate change emergency. The executive, Crawford Puckatuck, wanted to add language to protect natural resource extraction from native lands, saying that otherwise the declaration could risk the ability to develop oil and secure their economic future. But that effort failed, and Itchock says it's hard to believe that those events weren't part of ASRC's thinking.
If they really were talking about it legitimately for over a year, they would have had time to bring this issue to the shareholders and allow us to vote on it.
AFN President Julie Kitka says the Federation appreciates the needs of members to focus on their own local issues, and she says her organization will continue cooperating with ASRC. In Anchorage, with help from Zachariah Hughes, I'm Nat Herz.
The Legislative Council voted today to approve funding for new cameras for Gavel Alaska and the legislature's website. Gavel Alaska provides gavel-to-gavel coverage of legislative sessions through 360 North TV and online. It also covers Alaska Supreme Court hearings and other government hearings. Gavel Alaska and the legislature's website currently have separate cameras. Under the plan, they would share. Gavel Alaska would have access to more cameras and more meetings than it does now, and Gavel Alaska would be able to display computer presentations during meetings on the screen. Gavel Alaska would no longer have camera crews in committee rooms. KTOO operates Gavel Alaska. Cook Inlet natural gas producer Fury filed for bankruptcy in August. It owed lenders about $440 million. Earlier this month, it was sold for $15 million in a bankruptcy auction to a company called Hex. While that company is new to Alaska, the man who runs it is not. Alaska Journal of Commerce reporter Elwood Bramer broke the story, and Alaska's Energy Desk reporter Rasha McChesney sat down with him to find out more.
Hey, Elwood, how are you?
Quite well. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. Just kind of curious about this deal. Can you tell me more about the company that just bought Fury? Who owns it?
Based on the state business records, it's owned by John Hendricks, who is a former oil and gas advisor to Governor Bill Walker. Before that, he worked with Apache Corp, and he was their general manager in Alaska. They were exploring Cook Inlet for a while, so this is definitely a realm he has experience in.
Okay, so this is a Cook Inlet oil and gas guy, so he kind of knows his way around.
Yeah. Fury was a Texas-based company under their former iteration, and certainly those folks had been involved in the oil and gas industry, but we all know there's unique challenges to operating in Alaska, particularly offshore.
And what did Hex just buy?
Well, Fury has a platform out in Cook Inlet, the Julius R. platform in the kitchen lights unit. And it's allegedly on top of oil prospects, so he bought all that infrastructure and the state leases that it sits on. It's producing natural gas. Fury has three contracts with area electric and gas utilities.
So who is going to be impacted by the sale? Is it going to cause interruptions in the gas supply in Cook Inlet?
I think the utilities are trying to figure that out as well. Fury had some mechanical problems this year that interrupted their gas supplies to Homer Electric and NSTAR. And NSTAR just filed court documents basically saying that they're in discussions with Hex as to whether or not they'll be able to meet those contracts. But I think everybody would hope that the gas supply that heats everybody's homes and keeps their lights on would become more reliable.
Is it clear why someone would buy a company that went bankrupt? What's the incentive?
By all counts, Hex got a pretty good deal. The platform is just a couple years old, quite new in oil infrastructure terms, and the platform cost a couple $100 million to build and put out in the middle of the inlet. There's also, like we mentioned, oil prospects in the area. So if Hex can drill for that oil and find it without some of the debt burden that Fury carries, it could become a profitable venture.
Elwood, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Happy to help. Thank you.
That was Alaska's Energy Desk reporter Rasha McChesney in Juneau talking to Alaska Journal of Commerce reporter Elwood Bramer in Anchorage. And finally, the Washington State Transportation Commission voted yesterday afternoon to move forward with recommendations for a proposed by-the-mile tax to replace the state's current gas tax. KOMO reports the 16 recommendations approved by the commission will be sent to the legislature, Governor Jay Inslee, and the Federal Highway Commission by January 13th. They urge the legislature to take a slow and gradual approach to the pay-per-mile tax over the coming decade and to start with hybrid and electric vehicles. Washington has one of the highest gas taxes in the country, but has brought in less money in recent years due to more people driving electric and fuel-efficient cars. Washington drivers currently pay 49.4 cents tax per gallon of gas. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.